Okay, hello and welcome to the Yes and Zined Pod. My name is Max Seffer and I'm your host today. This time we're talking to Richard Ruane of R Rook Studio. Hey there, Richard, and welcome to the pod.
Hey, Max, it's great to get a chance to talk to you.
Yeah, I'm super excited. Zine Month is, I think we're almost towards the end of Zine Month when this is going to get posted, so I'm super excited to come and talk about your game bundle. So would you take a minute and introduce yourself to everybody and let us know what you do in the indie tabletop role-playing scene?
I'm Richard Ruane. I am the creator of R Rook Studios. Many, many moons ago, I used to do work for White Wolf, and I started creating independent, you know, zine-size game content back in 2020. I had previously done a few things for a few other zines like Codex and some stuff for my local game store writing. And then I'm working on my fourth crowdfunding project. And this is my first itch funding project. Previously, I'd done Barrow Keep, Enoch's Wake, and Moonlight on Roosevelt Beach. So,
ooh, awesome. I'm super excited for you to itch fund. I think it's the hot thing to do these days. So it's cool to see people doing it. We are here to talk about your very exciting bundle. I think you might be one of the few people doing a Zine Month bundle. Mm-hmm. And to my understanding, there's going to be three games in this bundle. There's going to be Sherwood, there's going to be Dragonmaw Cave, and Winter Travels on Night Roads.
Yeah.
So, Richard, would you just tell us a little bit, give us an elevator pitch for this bundle? Why are you awesome, and why are we going to buy a million copies?
So this is a really fun bundle for me because it gives me a chance to revisit some projects I've had out there for a while. Dragonmaw Cave was one of the very first projects I published for my local game store, where we did it as a free adventure, kind of as an independent thing for Free RPG Day back in 2017. Winter Travels was originally some stuff I had written for Barrow Keep that just really didn't end up fitting well into that zine, but that I really loved, and it was really fun to do for Troika. And Sherwood is really kind of a labor of love on my part to kind of bring the rules of the space fantasy game I did last year, Enoch's Wake, into kind of a historical fantasy setting. I'm a lifelong fan of Robin Hood media and Robin Hood novels, and I'm really, really looking forward to being able to do that.
Yeah, that's so cool. So, you know, unfortunately, you have three awesome games. We're not going to have time to go into depth to all three. So let's just focus on Sherwood.
Perfect.
So you already mentioned the Robin Hood, but maybe talk a little bit about the inspirations mm-hmm. you had for Sherwood. Like, what were you thinking as you were designing it?
When I first started kind of designing Enoch's Wake, it had already funded, and I had initially kind of had a slightly different plan. And it sort of morphed as I was actually putting that plan into motion and writing it. And I was really excited because it seemed like I was hitting on something that really sort of enabled me to do some different stuff with life paths than I had done before. I'm a huge fan of life paths as kind of a solo play thing you get to do separate from the actual at table play, really kind of finding a character emergently from doing a really quick kind of life path process, or even a longer, slower life path process. And my favorite games like Beyond the Wall and Traveler used it. And as soon as I started getting Enoch's Wake out, I thought, well, I can really kind of take this life path system and use it for some other things. And chatted a little bit about with it with followers on Twitter, found some fun ideas that I really wanted to try. And the one that really stuck out to me as the one I was most excited about was really kind of giving a chance to sort of bring out that Robin Hood legend. Life paths are really good at sort of creating that kind of ragtag band of characters who come from all these different places and kind of are united in a common cause, which is a lot of how like the whole opening chapters of most Robin Hood myth or Robin Hood legends, Robin Hood novels kind of get told, is kind of that assembling the band or bringing these very different people together across age, across social class, and really kind of giving them a chance to like create where they came from and how they got to be the competent characters that they are.
Yeah. And, you know, if you could give, you know, us and the listeners, what's a quick definition of a life path game to you? How would you define that?
I grew up with a copy of Traveler on my shelf and no one wanted to play it.
Right.
Because no one wanted to die in character creation. So the first game I got to play with a life path was Beyond the Wall. And I fell deeply in love with sort of those kind of village creation questions that kind of blended in with the character creation questions and really united with the way that Beyond the Wall does introductory setup adventures. where all the aspects of the village and all these aspects of your characters' lives gonna get kind of drawn in and implicated in very random sort of ways, or ways that are very random and emergent, but then sort of fall together beautifully in play. That was kind of my first introduction to Life Paths, where, you know, you're kind of creating this character through this kind of series of questions about where they came from. These questions also affect sort of mechanical aspects of your character kind of going forward. I got a chance to go sit down and revisit Traveler and finally get people to play it with me and make a lot more Traveler characters. And that's really sort of where I remembered, hey, this is kind of the original Life Path game, where you have this entire career before you begin your life as a space kind of adventurer. You might have had that career in all so many different places.
It's so on brand now, too. There's a lot of tabletop role-playing games looking at that, like you mentioned, kind of revisiting that theme of really fleshing out the whole character's life. Mm-hmm. Like, I know with long Dungeons and Dragons campaigns, like, people love that stuff, really building out the lore of their character.
Right. And I think it's really fun for me, too, because I used to be one of those people in, like, the White Wolf era who could write, like, an entire novella of backstory.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't do that anymore. I just don't have that sort of energy for any right. one character. But the Life Path really kind of gives you a chance to do it in a way that's really embedded in the world. And I feel like frequently those long backstories ended up generating characters who ended up too much lore and too much stuff pulled in.
Yeah, right.
But it brings the world into your character, where genre and lore kind of meet kind of the character creation process and kind of organize it so that it's not just like a 5-hour long writing activity that everybody feels obliged to do, whether they're feeling motivated or not.
We've kind of talked about the genealogy with that. So with Sherwood in particular, we've talked about Life Path. So in addition to the Life Path stuff, what has influenced your choice of mechanics in Sherwood?
So mechanically, the game is really kind of inspired a little bit by PBTA. Looking at that really kind of standard, every roll is really going for that one probability, which is 8, which kind of goes back to sort of old school Traveler even before PBTA, but making it where GM does not roll. So it's a responsive GM set of mechanics, a lot like PBTA. So if you don't make that 8, the GM is making moves, making decisions, reacting to, and Monster Hearts, I think, uses the reaction rather than hard move or soft move language, I think, beautifully.
Sure, yeah.
It's, I think, a little more accessible to new GMs. But instead of the GM rolling and the players rolling, it emerges much more smoothly and quickly when the characters try something, but there's always something that can happen if they miss. And on top of that, Traveler had played with something around these at various times, but never really sort of defined it. And that's probably going to get a lot of bad press from me among the Traveler fans, but you know, that's okay. But instead of your core stats informing roles, letting your core stats modify roles. And that's a little bit informed by the fun I had playing Cypher.
Yes.
Oh. But shifting it so that they come after the role. So that's really sort of one of the ways that things go wrong or can go wrong when you have a role that does not hit that like magic number 8.
Right.
You spend your characteristics or your stats to sort of move that up to succeed. But eventually, that sort of winds down your spotlight time. So you really need to share the spotlight. You need to work collaboratively with the other players, or you need to sort of estimate what you can do or what's going to work well for your skill set so that you can get in and out while still having some resources left. And that's kind of both Cypher and Gumshoe, yeah, have really influenced me there.
Yeah, and I love that, like, you're not just kind of resigning yourself to the dice. Like, even though we're bringing in some random number generation with dice, you still have a little bit of control over that, and you kind of get to guide your story how you want to.
Yeah, and it's going to cost you.
Right.
It does give you a chance to decide, like, oh, wait, this wasn't as high stakes. Maybe I'll just deal with the consequences here and save that luck or that wits characteristic so that I can use it later and see what happens now.
Yeah.
So you have some resource management questions you're still asking about, like, hey, where am I going to really put my energy?
So if you had to pick one favorite bit of Sherwood that you've designed so far, what would that be? What do you want to share with the listeners?
It is really nerdy. It is super, super,
I love
super
it.
Nerdy.
Give it to me.
But it's just going to be like big old history nerd. Well, big old folklore nerd. We know that like Robin Hood is a person who did not exist in any meaningful sense. Like you may have been able to go back in time and find somebody named Robert Hood, but they were unlikely to be the person in the legends. But you know, we do have some medieval outlaws who we do know exist. We have okay historical records for, and they added a lot of legends around themselves. But one of my favorites is Eustace the Monk, who was just a awful, awful person, and did everything from going into a monastery, leaving the monastery, becoming a pirate, becoming a forest bandit, occupying Channel Islands and fighting on both sides of various wars. Just a terrible person. But these great stories around the legend, and that Robin Hood eventually inherits some of those stories. They get kind of disattributed to Eustace the Monk and reattributed to Robin Hood.
Very cool.
Because Friar Tuck is such an iconic character that got added to the Robin Hood myth later and probably had a kind of life in folklore before Robin Hood. Eustace the Monk was the source of the Order of Friars. So they're all the Eustacian friars. So that is my nerdy, weird little thing I have just loved and spent way too much time patting myself on the back over.
I mean, you were in the right crowd.
Yeah.
We are a whole bunch of nerds in this crew.
Yeah, yeah. So that was my favorite little bit of sort of folklore slash history fun that I was able to have with Robin Hood. And then also moving the outlaws around in history a little bit so they come a little later in English history so that they can be part of some of those historical events that don't have good guys on either side.
Totally.
And sort of like a third force.
Yeah, so I'd love to hear more about your itch funding campaign and just your overall, like, just tell us, what's your goal with the crowdfunding campaign that you're doing through Zine Month?
Like right now, it's a little soft up in the air. This may shift between the time we record and the time I finally release, but I'm looking for about $1,000 across the three zines. One of the lovely things about itch funding, though, is that your goal and your deadlines are flexible. So once you press that launch button, it's not like Kickstarter or GameFound where you are locked into that goal.
Right.
So one of the nice things I can do with itch funding is A, fund three different zines. That I don't have to hack Kickstarter to try to organize, like, I'm going to fund three zines and you get to pick which one you want, which is always a big hassle with a Kickstarter campaign. Mm-hmm. It's possible to do it. I've known some creators who've done some great little bundles or collections. You're always really building like too many rewards and add-ons and other things to try to make it work.
Yeah, no stretch goals here.
Yeah. But the other thing that itch funding is really great for is if you're also selling the same product on other sites, you can just sort of account for those and lower your goal as you go. So yeah, like if I have like $1,000 goal and I put this up on Drive-Thru or Lean Pub or some other marketplace,
right,
I can account for those by just lowering the goal. Like I don't have to have like a back end that's calculating how much I've totally made. I can just look at my revenue and go like, hey, I've made enough on Drive-Thru sales that I can lower my goal on itch and get the same product out. That's been the great sort of breath of fresh air for itch funding, as well as just the ability to go like, you know what, I really love this project and it didn't make in like the 3 week period I set aside for it, so I'm going to stretch it by another 7 days.
Yeah.
And that's my call, and I don't have to worry about Kickstarter and I don't have to worry about GameFound or getting permission for anything. I can just go like, yeah, hey, like I'm going to give you guys 14 more days to see if you want a print copy of this.
I'm not sure if you knew, but I'm actually with Hanukkah Goblins I did in 2020. I was actually one of the first mm-hmm. people in the TTRPG scene to do an itch fund. So December 2020.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I did not realize that.
So I can't take credit for everything. This was discussions we were having in Discord servers mm-hmm. and whatnot. If we were talking about itch funding before there was even a name for it. So Hanukkah Goblins happened in December of 2020. And then it was probably January or February, itch funding kind of got its name. So I was one of the early adopters.
That's amazing. That's great.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize you were the person behind Hanukkah Goblins.
That's me. I am the Hanukkah Goblin.
Oh, that's awesome. The original Hanukkah Goblin.
So you mentioned with the itch funding, what are your hopes besides just funding on this project? Like, what was your kind of ideal outcome out of this project?
I think one of the things that I'm doing for this that I really want to test the waters on is starting with simple documents and letting the funding money go towards print-ready documents, including the print-ready PDF and the actual print product. And I plan to, you know, release the print product, but getting the simple PDF, the one with the minimal art, you know, or a few decorative pieces, but they're large, easy to mark decorative pieces,
right,
not worrying about sort of spot art, not worrying about complex layout, and putting it out in simple PDF and EPUB first so that people have something at the time they buy.
I love that.
Which is another great thing about itch funding is it does give you some space to just put out products that you don't have to work hard to get that to backers, and you don't have to worry about like, but what if I give this backer a freebie as soon as they pledge?
Yeah.
And then they drop their pledge.
Right.
That's another nice thing with itch funding is I can get the EPUB out there. People buy it. Same thing with the simple PDF. And then I can charge people extra to sort of help fund the print run, which also creates the nice, kind of nicely formatted PDF. So really kind of testing that simple document to complex document. So
Richard, this has been awesome. Please tell everyone on the internet, where can we find you online? Where are you talking about cool stuff?
All right. So mainly I am on Twitter. My personal account is ARR_ROO. And my professional or like the publisher account is R_Rookery. And my website is r-rook.com.
Amazing. And all of those will also be in the description for the podcast. I think that just about wraps up our interview. And thank you so much for coming on the Yes and Zined podcast. It's been amazing to have you. And I wish you all the best luck with your crowdfunding campaign.
Oh, same to you. And great luck with Esther and the Queens. Good luck with that. I am really excited for that project. So
thank you. All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for listening, and thanks again to Max and Richard for the interview. As always, you can find all of the links in the episode description. Today's episode is sponsored by the Indie Zine. Hey you! Yes you! Do you like indie TTRPG content? Do you want, like, shed loads of weird, exciting, radical, bizarre, introspective games? Do you want to read a collection of often snarky but usually interesting articles? Do you want to get just a metric ton of random tables and stuff? And what about a photo comic about adventurers, what made of yarn and some such? Well, you can, and you can do it while supporting dozens of indie creators from all around the world and the scene. The Indie Zine, patent pending, is a quarterly indie TTRPG zine with 6 rock-solid back issues available right now and 1 issue,
The Zine Before Time,
out in late March. It's also extremely affordable, and every penny goes to creators or is reinvested in the zine itself. So go for broke. Get your copies of the Indie Zine today.
Terms and conditions apply. Your home is at risk if you do not keep up repayments on a mortgage or other loan secured on it. The value of an investment may go down as well as up, and you may not get back the money you invested. It should not be assumed the value of investments always rises. You should ensure that you have financial capacity to bear the risk and only invest the amount you are willing to lose.
To complement the Yes Indeed Pod event, all through February, Yes Indeed Pod is running a Patreon drive. We're trying to hit $200 per month so that we can continue to pay all of our guests as well as hire a podcast transcriber. If you sign up during February, on top of the usual benefits of being a subscriber, you can also get some exclusive merchandise. Sign up at $2 to get a handwritten postcard, as well as regular shoutouts and access to our guest and subscriber Discord server. At $5 per month, you can also join our monthly editing and chat streams, and I'll send you a handwritten greetings card and your choice of Yes Indeed Pod stickers. And at $20 per month, join our book club, where every month you get free PDFs from one of our guests. As well as a greetings card and stickers, you'll also get an exclusive, personalised faux leather bookmark for your RPG reading. So remember, if you love Yes Indeed Pod and want to support what we do and get some exclusive merchandise, be sure to check out patreon.com/yesindeedpod. If you can't commit regularly, you can always help out by rating and reviewing the show wherever you find your podcasts, or by donating through the Ko-Fi page at ko-fi.com/yesindeedpod. Of course, you can always reach out to me through Twitter at yesindeedpod, that's YESINDIEDPOD. I'd love dearly to hear from you. Lastly, music credits. All music is adapted from Nothing Like Captain Crunch from Slam Funk by Broke for Free, available on the Free Music Archive and released under Creative Commons Attribution 3.0 Unported License. Until next time, remember, does indie need you? Yes, indeed.